Hello, this is Debbie with part two of Decatur Papers and News for Wednesday, October 21st, 2015, beginning as we do usually with the obituaries. Clinton Barlow. Patricia Ann Barlow, 77, of Clinton, Illinois, passed away 9:19 a.m., October 19, 2015, at her residence surrounded by family in Clinton. Services will be at 10 a.m., Friday, October 23, 2015, at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, Illinois, with Pastor Mark Phillips officiating. The family requests casual affair. Burial will follow at Lizen B. Cemetery Lane, Illinois. Visitations will be 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 22nd at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Memorials may be directed to the Patricia Barlow Memorial Fund. Mattoon, Bunning. Sonia I. Bunning, 68, of Mattoon, Illinois, formerly a former resident of Decatur, passed away Saturday, October 17th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Services for Sonia will be private. Memorial contributions may be made to Decatur Catholic Charities, 247 West Prairie, Decatur, Illinois. The family of Sonia Bunning is being served by the Moran and Goebel Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Decatur. Springfield, Hildenbrand. Marion L. Hildenbrand, 91, of Springfield, formerly of Iliopolis and Riverton, went to be with the Lord at 7:22 p.m. on Sunday, October 18, 2015, at Lewis Memorial Christian Village. Visitation. Family will receive friends from 5 to 8 on Thursday, October 22nd at Boardman Smith Funeral Home on Grand Avenue in Springfield. Visitation will begin with a prayer service led by Reverend Clint Honkamp. Funeral ceremony 10 a.m. on Friday, October 23rd at Boardman Smith Funeral Home with Pastor Chuck Ferris officiating. Burial will follow at Riverside Cemetery in Iliopolis. Memorial contributions may be made to Memorial Home Services on Bond Street in Springfield or Lewis Memorial Christian Village on Washington Street in Springfield. The family would like to thank Memorial Hospice Care and the staff at Lewis Memorial Christian Village for the wonderful care they provided to Marion during her final days. Lake City, Howard. Richard L. Howard, 86, of Lake City, passed away 5:43 p.m. Wednesday, October 7th at St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur. The family of Richard L. Howard will be hosting a Celebration of Life Memorial Service on Sunday, October 25th at 1 p.m. at the LaPlace United Methodist Church, LaPlace, Illinois. Please come share your favorite memories of Richard as we say goodbye. In lieu of flowers, the family asked that donations be made to the LaPlace United Methodist Church. Decatur, Johnson. Isaiah Carnell. On October 15, 2015, our little four-month-old angel, Isaiah Carnell Johnson, was given his wings at 10:37 p.m. He was affectionately known by the family as Zay-Zay, or Granny's Little Applehead. Services will be held 11 a.m. Friday, October 23rd, at Main Street Church of the Living God, with visitation 1 hour before services. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Decatur. Mayor. Daniel Lynn Mayer passed away peacefully at 12:22 a.m. October 18, 2015, surrounded by a circle of love. Special thanks. Go to the doctors. You made this goodbye a little less painful. Memorial service will be held from 5 to 7 at Walker Funeral Services. Services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Decatur. Spanbauer. Mary Frances Shepherd Spanbauer, 88, of Westville, Ohio, peacefully passed away Saturday, October 17th, at the Columbus Colony Elderly Care in Westerville, Ohio. A mass of Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 22, 2015 at St. Thomas Catholic Church at 2160 North Edward in Decatur. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church and burial immediately following at Calvary Cemetery at West El Dorado Street. The family of Mary Frances Spanbauer is being served by Moran and Goebel Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Decatur. And that is the end of the death notices for Wednesday, October 21st, as reported from the Decatur Herald and Review. Budget tension grows stronger, says the headline. Kirk Erickson from the Herald and Review Springfield. He's the Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield, lack of progress on solving the Illinois budget mess is some lawmakers offering up unique ideas on Tuesday. In plea to her colleagues on the floor of the House, State Representative Sue Scher, Democrat Decatur, suggested every member wear black when they return to the Capitol in November. Amid the sea of red ink that is state government, Scher said the move would show solidarity among Democrats and Republicans at a time when the two sides are otherwise far apart. It is a grave and serious matter that the state of Illinois remains without a budget. I'm encouraging legislators from both parties in both the House and the Senate to wear black on November 10th as a show of unity and their willingness to work together to resolve this crisis, Scher said. State Representative Chad Hayes, Republican Catlin, argued in favor of locking lawmakers inside the Capitol until the solution is found. But Hayes voiced his proposal after most members of the Senate had already left the building following another mostly fruitless trip to the capital city. Tuesday marked the 112th day state government has been operating without a budget and the first time in a month that the General Assembly convened. Although Governor Bruce Rauner met with Republican lawmakers for more than an hour, he offered no comments to reporters after the closed-door session. House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat Chicago, repeated his position that the Republican governor needs to stop holding the budget hostage to his demands for Democrats to approve laws that seek to weaken labor unions. I think we should operate in moderation. We shouldn't tolerate collateral damage, Madigan said. But the drumbeat of pain surrounding the lack of a budget continued. On a 7-2 vote, a House committee approved a plan to free up $1.9 billion in spending affecting lottery winnings, gas tax money for cities and towns, and cash owed to local 9/11 emergency telephone systems. Without a formal budget, the money financing those programs cannot be spent, leaving communities and lottery winners waiting for Rauner and Democrat to end the stalemate. Dana Stiles, director of the Bureau County 9/11 system, said she has 3 months left before her agency runs out of money to operate, leaving residents in danger during emergency situations. My county agency needs help right now to survive, Stiles told members of the House Executive Committee. The legislation, however, is not set to be voted on until next month. It would then have to move through the Senate. College students and university presidents descended on the State House to urge lawmakers and Rauner to get a budget on the books. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz said administrators and students contend a budget agreement will bring stability to higher education. All our universities are committed to our students to get them through the academic year. That's an ethical obligation. Our students didn't come to our institutions to spend a day, a month, or a semester. They came to spend a year. We're hopeful that people will hear us and take some positive action, said Dietz while he waited for a meeting with House Minority Leader Jim Durkin. Republicans bemoaned the lack of progress between Rauner and the Democrats. How do we get out of this mess, people, said State Representative David Harris, Republican at Arlington Heights. Gentlemen, come to the middle. Get an agreement to serve our state. They can do it if the will is there. The lack of movement on budgetary issues came a day after the Illinois credit rating suffered another hit when Fitch Ratings downgraded the state from A- to BBB+. Fitch's move leaves Illinois with the lowest credit rating in the nation. The problem just continues to fester, Madigan said. End of article. Next article, Stu Ellis. El Nino brings bad with the good. This is by Scott Perry. Corn Belt farmers may just want to keep the machine shed doors open for the next several months. The current weather regime has allowed early maturing corn and soybean fields to be dispatched in near record time. One may have to drive a long distance to find a standing crop in central Illinois. In the balance of the Corn Belt, particularly to the northwest, late summer and early fall rains have kept crops green, delayed maturity, and lengthened the harvest period. The dominant weather, thanks to El Nino, should keep the winter of 2015-16 at bay longer than usual. Warmer than normal Pacific Ocean waters will influence Midwestern temperatures and delay the onset of typical cold, harsh temperatures. In fact, a group of Midwest climatologists observed last week this winter would bring reduced heating costs, fewer transportation costs and delays, and increased retail sales. On the other hand, there'd be reductions in winter recreation and the increased survival of agricultural pests through the winter. Here in central Illinois, where harvest is over 90% complete, there is a 33% chance of warmer and drier winter weather. In Iowa, Minnesota, and the Dakotas, where harvest is just getting a good start, there's a 50 to 60% chance, better chances than normal for much warmer wintertime temperatures. That latter scenario will allow harvest to progress efficiently for combines and grain carts to be properly cleaned and serviced, and final upgrades to be performed on planting equipment just in time to be rolled out in early March. Yes, early March. Thanks to El Nino, the heart of the Corn Belt will be drier than it would be in a typical winter, and the northern tier of states in the U.S. would be expected to have warmer than normal temperatures. The combination of a warm, dry winter means an earlier start for the 2016 planting season. Corn Belt farmers may be ready to roll open the machine sheds about the 1st of March, not long after having closed them early in the winter. There'll be barely enough time for all the wintertime equipment maintenance and technology installations that will be needed to convert 4 to 5 year old equipment into seemingly new models with the latest indicators of machine performance and crop quality. While El Nino will bring a short and mild winter, there could be other problems that occur. Warm and dry conditions over the next 4 months will not help central Illinois soil moisture, which is abnormally dry. Within a 9-state area of the Midwest, 32% of the soil is considered abnormally dry, which is up from only 2% in mid-July. If the soil is dry coming out of winter, some farmers may wait for an early onset of La Nina to replace El Nino before planting. Another potential is the seed production by major seed companies. The 2016 seed supply will hinge on the impact of El Nino on South America, where large seed production fields provide just-in-time delivery to U.S. farmers, and the forecast is not pretty, much less conducive to good seed production. El Nino summers in the southern hemisphere can be devastating to crops, and that is the origination point for much of the seed destined for U.S. planting next spring. If the harvest in South American nations is either minimal or delayed, there won't be any impact on the grain market, but there will be delays on the scheduled delivery of seed to the Corn Belt farmers in March. End of the article. In news updated 2 minutes ago on this website, it says Illini's Nun needs surgery. This is by Mark Tupper, the executive sports editor for the Herald and Review. Champagne. When he spoke last Thursday at the Big Ten Conference Basketball Media Day event, Illini coach John Grosch opened with a joke. "I tried to make sure when I got out of bed this morning I didn't trip over anything," Grosch said. Turns out he wasn't really joking. Junior guard Kendrick Nunn will undergo surgery on Wednesday morning to repair a ligament injury in his left shooting thumb, and will be out for 8 weeks, the university said Tuesday in a brief statement. It's the third likely starter and fourth member of the top seven to be sidelined by injury, ravaging what Grosch felt was a lineup that could return Illinois to the NCAA tournament after a two-year absence. Nunn, who averaged 11.1 points as a sophomore, injured his thumb October 13th in practice and visited a hand specialist last Thursday. He joins Tracy Abrams, LeRon Black, and Jalen Colin Lands on the sideline. If Nunn can return to action in 8 weeks, he would miss 11 regular season games and would be back on the court in time for the December 19th home game against South Dakota. That ignores time to become acclimated to game conditions and whatever rust might need to be worked through. It would give him one more game prior to the annual Bragging Rights contest, December 23rd, against Missouri in St. Louis. Abrams, a fifth-year senior point guard, is out for the season with a ruptured Achilles tendon. He also missed last season with a serious knee injury. Black, the sophomore power forward, who led Illinois in scoring and rebounding on the team's August trip to Europe, was ruled out for 4 to 6 weeks when he had surgery October 9th to address a meniscus tear in his knee. Coleman Landis missed the entire summer, resting a stress fracture in his lower left leg. While surgery was a possibility, doctors cleared him for a return to basketball activities, although Grosch cautioned that he'll be eased into these activities slowly. Grosch said he hoped to have Coleman Landis available November 13th for the regular season opener, but that's today, when he was delivering an optimistic projection on October 8th. So on October 8th, he was hoping for November 13th. When Nunn was first injured, Grosch was asked who he would start if the team had a game that night. Grosch said Malcolm Hill and transfer center Mike Thorne Jr. were easy picks, and he imagined redshirt freshman Michael Fink would replace Black at power forehead. But with the injuries, the rest of the lineup would take some thinking, he said. I would play freshman Aaron Jordan at Nunn's position, he said. I could also play two point guards, Jalen Tate, and fifth-year transfer Kaylid Lewis. Grosch also had freshman DJ Williams available, and he has been talking about redshirt junior Alex Austin, who transferred and sat out last season after starting 36 games over 2 years at Eastern Illinois University. Austin, Grosch said, is one of the team's best perimeter defenders. He would clearly be in the rotation, Grosch said. He's gotten stronger and better, and he knows the system. He takes care of the ball, and he defends, and he has a good Big Ten body for a guard. He's 6'4", maybe 6'5". Austin, who went to the Chicago Mount Carmel High School with Abrams, is the son of former Purdue star guard Woody Austin. Grosch said he had no choice but to adopt a next-man-up attitude and try to keep his team morale positive. You know, it's an interesting situation when a doctor says, hey, the guy will be out for 4 weeks, and you go, yes, Grosch said with a fist pump. That's when you know you've been through a lot. It's unprecedented, but we're going to figure it out. End of the article. We'll continue with Decatur News with the Decatur Tribune Online, put out by Paul Osborne, editor and publisher, and starting with Paul Osborne's City Beat, Neighborhood Wins Battle Against Rezoning for New Aldi Store. A request to rezone parcels at the intersection of Ash Avenue and US 51 to facilitate the development of a new Aldi grocery store was denied by a vote of 4-3 by Decatur City Council Monday night. Oh, the article I read before was old. Neighbors of the proposed area have been strong in their opposition to rezoning, contending that locating an Aldi store at that location would cause more traffic congestion and create safety issues. They turned out big time for the Monday night meeting, which was held in the Civic Center Theater due to the anticipated size of the crowd. After many comments were made, mostly against rezoning, council members Jerry Dawson, Bill Faber, Lisa Gregory and Pat McDaniel voted against rezoning, with Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and council members Chris Funk and Dana Ray voting for it. Last week in this column, I wrote that if the vote were held at this time, rezoning would lose by a 4-3 vote. So he was right. I knew that Dawson, Faber, and McDaniel would vote against it and felt that Dana Ray's vote could go either way. As it turned out, the fourth vote came from someone that many people expected to vote for rezoning, Lisa Gregory. Although she kept quiet about her vote, it was rumored late last week that she had indicated to some homeowners of the area she would not vote for rezoning. There were a lot of rumors floating around over the many weeks this issue has been on the hot topic for Decatur. However, it doesn't make much difference now. Gregory voted against it and actually became the unexpected tiebreaker in the 4-3 vote to reject rezoning for the site. The question now is, will Aldi's find another site in Decatur, move to Forsyth, or simply stay and expand where the store is located on Pershing? Next article, continuing in the column for Osborne. City wants title Decatur Public Library Building. The Decatur Library Board of Trustees should have some kind of answer regarding the City of Decatur's desire to own the library. After a special meeting Thursday, October 22nd, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf made it clear in a letter to the library board last Thursday the city of Decatur wants the title to the library building at 130 North Franklin Street. Moore Wolf stated, "I have made the request to John Phillips and Mike Sorensen that the city of Decatur desires the title to 130 North Franklin Street. Decatur residents have paid for this building through taxes and contributions through your fundraising efforts. The library is a valuable asset to this committee. To this community. The city is committed to ensuring the library is maintained and preserved so it can continue to provide service and enjoyment for our citizens, both new and in the future. I would appreciate consideration of my request at the board level." Also in the board, Moore Wolf stated, "I think it's appropriate to communicate with the entire board at this time. Up to this point, meetings have been conducted exclusively with John Phillips, Jim Alpe, and now John Phillips, Mark Sorensen." Translation, at least the way I read it, is the discussion with board members, Phillips, board president, and Sorensen, are not getting anywhere. So the appeal is for the entire board to know what the city wants and to make a decision. "I did make contact with the board and was told there would be no official reply from the board until after Thursday, tomorrow's meeting. That's understandable." Moore Wolf said, "There are real opportunities related to the property. This is an asset to the city that the city should maintain and explore opportunities for the unused space. This has never occurred, and city manager Tim Gleason has been contacted about some very real opportunities and is anxious to consider those further. Last November, Library Board trustees, Macon County Government, and the Decatur Public Building Commission announced what appeared to be a win-win plan and agreement. But in that plan, the library board would sell the building to the building commission. Macon County government offices would move from Macon County office building into the unused space in the annex and on the second floor of the library building. Then the vacated building at 141 South Main would be converted by a private developer into residential space." Not so fast. Well, as it turned out, none of this can happen unless the Decatur City Council gives its formal approval for the plan. When the then-Mayor Mike McElroy and the council members, including present Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, received the details about the impact on the city government, the city applied the brakes. The city still owes $735,000 in outstanding debt from bonds issued in 1998 to pay for the library renovations, and the building is also listed as a $4.1 million asset on the city's financial statements, even though the library board holds the deed. "It all gets a little complicated," says he. "The last time I checked, the feeling on the library board is the November plan is still the best option, but that's not going to happen if the city council turns thumbs down to it and indicates the city can do better by getting the title. So if the library board trustees reject giving the title to the city and the city council rejects allowing the library board to move ahead with the original plan, well, this may not be pretty. The library board is caught between a rock and a hard place." That's the end of his column for today. In entertainment, events and meetings, Kirkland Fine Arts Center presents An Afternoon with Groucho, October 25th. Millikan University's Kirkland Fine Arts Center presents the hilarity of award-winning actor-slash-director-slash-playwright Frank Ferrante, who will recreate his PBS, New York, and London acclaimed portrayal of legendary comedian Groucho Marx on Sunday, October 25th, beginning at 2 p.m. The two-act comedy consists of the best of Groucho one-liners, anecdotes, and songs, including Hooray for Captain Spaulding and Lydia the Tattooed Lady. The audience literally becomes part of the show as Ferrante ad-libs his way through the performance in grand Groucho style. Accompanied by his onstage pianist, Ferrante portrays the young Groucho of stage and film and reacquaints us with the likes of brothers Harpo, Chico, Zeppo, and Gummo, Charlie Chaplin, W.C. Fields, Marx Foyle, Margaret Dumont, and MGM's Louis B. Mayer. Frank Ferrante was described by the New York Times as the greatest living interpreter of Groucho Marx material, Animal Crackers, and A Night at the Opera. Let's take that over again. Frank Ferrante was described by the New York Times as the greatest living interpreter of Groucho Marx material. Animal Crackers and A Night at the Opera co-author Maury Riskin called him the only actor, aside from Groucho, who delivered my lines as they were intended. Discovered by Groucho's sons, Arthur, when Frank was a drama student at the University of Southern California. Frank originated the off-Broadway title role in Groucho, A Life in Review, written by Arthur, portraying the comedian from age 15 to 85. For this role, Frank won 1987's New York Theatre World Award and was nominated for an Outer Critics Circle Award. He reprised the role in London's West End and was nominated for the Laurence Olivier Award for Comedy Performance of the Year. Frank played the Groucho role in the off-Broadway revival of the Cocoa Nuts, and has played Captain Spaulding in several productions of Animal Crackers, winning a Connecticut Critics Circle Award for his portrayal at Goodspeed Opera House and a Helen Hayes nomination in Washington, D.C. at Arena Stage. Another possibility for an activity this weekend is Lincoln's New Salem presents 1830s Fall Festival, October 24th and 25th. Petersburg, Illinois. Sights and sounds of life in the 1830s will greet visitors to Lincoln, New Salem State Historic Site during the site's Fall Festival on the weekend of October 24th, 25th. Costume interpreters will demonstrate daily tasks such as making soap, weaving baskets, spinning wool, and dyeing cloth. Experts will demonstrate the use of black powder rifles. Visitors can see meat smoking in the historic site's period smokehouses or stop by a cabin to smell wild game being cooked. A visit to the tavern's cellar will reveal how fruits and vegetables were preserved during the winter, and kettle corn will be prepared over an open fire. The free event lasts from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. Lincoln's New Salem, administered by the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency, is a recreation of the 1830s log village where Abraham Lincoln lived for 6 years. It is located along Route 97, about 2 miles south of Petersburg and 20 miles northwest of Springfield, and is open Wednesday through Sunday for free public tours. End of that section. Closing out this October 21st Decatur News, we'll do a Decatur Tribune's take on the Decatur Memorial Hospital SIU School of Medicine expanding collaboration. This is just a short part of this article. October 20th, 2015, Decatur Memorial Hospital and Southern Illinois University School of Medicine today announced an expanded collaboration that will allow patients easier access to specialty services. The 35-year academic and clinical partnership with the SIU Department of Family and Community Medicine will soon expand in Decatur to other services and specialties of the School of Medicine and its clinical practice, SIU Healthcare. SIU Healthcare providers in the adult and pediatric medicine will initially provide the following services at DMH: adult gastroenterology, neurology, dermatology, and reconstructive surgery, and pediatric specialties of cardiology, behavioral health, gastroenterology, pulmonology, and hematology oncology. The presence of expanded clinical education experience in Decatur for SIU medical students, physician assistant students, and resident physicians will further the teaching and academic medicine missions of both organizations. Decatur Memorial Hospital is proud to expand adult and pediatric medicine services and specialties in the Decatur community through the collaboration. This collaboration with SIU School of Medicine, said Timothy D. Stone, Jr., President, Decatur Memorial Hospital. As we have seen in other communities, a hospital's collaboration with the medical school has significant economic impact in the community. It is a principal aim of the Affordable Care Act to have primary and specialty services within a clinically integrated network. This expanded collaboration is a valuable complement to the services currently offered at DMH and will provide our community with more convenient access to additional medical specialties, negating the need to travel out of town, Stone said. So this concludes part two of the Decatur News reading for Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. This is Debbie saying adios and talk to you again soon.